Welcome to a world of thrills, a world of drama, of capes and tights, a world where death is a revolving door. Welcome to the Geek Matrix.
Robert, you muted.
Bitch. Yeah, I muted myself for the intro music. God damn, that was good too. Okay, as I was saying, hey, welcome to the Geek Matrix DC Comics Review Show. My name is Rob, and as always, I am joined today by my co-hosts, Brandon.
Hello, hello.
And Josh.
Hey, I'm finally back. It's been weeks.
Yeah.
At least two of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're like me.
I have.
We said two, not six.
No.
Two weeks, more like 2 months.
That might have been a low blow. I mean that in love.
Oh, it was like a whole 2 months. Trust me. I know. I lived it.
So I got a problem, dear listeners. And uh-oh. I need to voice it.
Uh-oh.
There's a stray cat that won't leave my house. It's an actual stray cat. It wants inside the house, and I am actively having to fight my wife and two children to keep a stray cat out of the house.
As well as me and Kirk. You have to fight me and Kirk.
I got you guys in there saying that this is not. My friends are not being friendly.
Or being friendly to your wife.
Being friendly to my wife.
Yeah.
No, we don't need another animal.
How many you got?
I got two dogs right now, and one of them has got dementia, for crying out loud. I am set. Yeah, and it's a damn Great Pyrenees, so.
Yeah,
it's a big ass dog. Dumb.
Yeah, that is not good.
No, and that's I don't need a cat.
You're not. Don't need. You're a cat, not a cat person, are you?
No, not a cat person at all. Enough. No.
Though if Holly wins and ends up keeping it, I agree with Kirk. You should name it Awesome.
Gonna name it Asshole is what I'm gonna name.
you're totally one of those dads. That's not my cat. Like, my dad was the exact same way.
Yeah.
No, and in the last few years of my cat's life, my dad was like in love with it. give it time.
Yeah. No, not happening. No, thank you. Look, no matter what part of the world you're in, a cat is an invasive species.
You're an invasive species.
That's what I've been told.
Just like you're a chemical sandwich.
That's an Oreo. I'm not an Oreo.
I'm convinced you were high.
That's what Isaiah said. Or no. That was about something else, I think. Accused me of having too many sandwiches.
You're high a lot, let's face it.
No, I don't know what you're talking about.
No, I mean, when you have the wild opinions.
Yeah, that's what everybody thinks. A dude must be stoned. No,
like
I'm just
deaf. Oreos are chemical sandwiches. And
they are chemical sandwiches. They're not a real cookie.
That makes no sense to me.
An Oreo, the chocolate part of an Oreo is not like any other cookie you've ever had.
How do you know? There's a lot of knockoffs up here. Like, every grocery store has their house brand, and they've got an Oreo.
But they're not. They don't have an Oreo. They've got their house brand. They have
the knockoff Oreo
sandwich.
It's
cookie.
An Oreo.
It's a Norio.
Norio.
Now, you just have to brand that and sell it to the anime kids.
Oh, God. Now my brain juices are flowing. Come up with an action anime where every character is named after a cookie.
Yes.
If it works for Toriyama with Dragon Ball, it can work for me.
Why can't it?
Exactly. Anyway, Happy New Year, folks. We are here with the first week of comics for 2024, and it's been fun. I gotta say, this is interesting week.
Yeah,
but not what I'm excited about the most. I'm gonna be honest with you.
Oh, well, I'm excited to hear what you're excited about.
I mean, well, we were talking about it before the show. I'm excited to see the future of the Energon universe.
Well, there you go. Yeah.
Not to start 2024 off not talking about DC Comics, but damn, reading Duke number one spinning off of is Kirkman doing Transformers, right? Or Kirkman just doing Void Rivals.
No.
No, it's Dana Warren Johnson.
No. Rob, I'm going to have to. You're banished. You're banned.
Why?
From the show.
Why?
Leave now.
No, it's not that much of a mistake.
Oh. Well, I mean, yeah, Kirkman is like leading the line.
It's his baby.
this is D-Dubs. This is Mr. Do a Powerbomb doing Transformers.
Yeah, I forgot. I'm sorry.
It should be a shame.
But Kirkman is doing Void Rivals, right? I'm not mistaken on that. Okay, yeah. Kirkman on Void Rivals, Daniel Warren Johnson, Mr. Do a Powerbomb himself. What an epic fucking series that was.
Oh, yeah. And definitely been some wrestling moments in Transformers.
Yeah.
Spotted
like a fucking Optimus gave Skywarp a fucking German suplex.
Yeah,
it was fantastic.
Which I didn't know a giant robot could move like that, but
Transformers can do.
Yeah,
I didn't know.
Can, I guess.
I bet you didn't know a giant robot could rip its arm off and smack a bitch with it, but
I didn't.
I'm learning all kinds of new things. Yeah, not just any motherfucker. I'm myself with. Hit them with my own self as a motherfucker. Yeah.
I feel like that's going above and beyond.
But anyway, tell us a little bit about the Energon universe.
I mean, we've talked about it before. I'm just excited about the future. Duke number one. I was trying not to tell Josh who's writing it because I don't want him to.
I know who's writing it.
You know who's writing. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's not a cape book, so you might enjoy it. Just saying.
There's only one way to find out.
Only one way to find out. Joshua Williamson doing the writing. I do not remember who's doing the art. I apologize.
Tom Riley.
He's yes.
Really good.
He is. Spinning out of Transformers number 2, Duke, if you were reading Transformers number 2, Duke was in there for a brief cameo, and Starscream intervened in a little air incident he was a part of, but he escaped, and now, yeah, I won't get into the details, you gotta read it to find out, and now Duke is dealing with the aftermath of that, partial therapy, partial insanity, at least according to his superior officer, Corporal Hawk. Is it corporal or commander?
I think it's corporal. Yeah. Corporal?
Yeah. And then goes off on his own to try and figure shit out after he gets basically kicked out of the army for not letting go of the fact that there's a giant fucking robot on the planet. No one seems to believe that.
Or even accept
despite
that.
Despite the fact that there's numerous sightings, I'm pretty sure they've been on the news a couple times, and one of them attacked a power plant.
Also, I'm just like, how do you explain away that? Because if I remember correctly, Starscream like crushed the plane with his hands.
Yeah.
Pretty recognizable damage that cannot
Did he? No, he okay, well, now we're gonna partially spoil it. He crushed the pilot, but the pilot was already ejected.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Splat.
Yeah, not the first person he splatted, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it true that Megatron's a good guy?
He's not in the story yet. I've heard some rumors about that and seen some images, but we'll see. See, the thing is, even in history before the war, depending on the continuity, but primarily Optimus and Megatron were allies.
Mm-hmm.
And they trained together. I'm getting my names muddled now. I want to say Alpha Trion, but I think I'm very fucking wrong. There's some Transformers fans yelling at me right now. But they trained together under the same teacher, and then eventually their ideology just split. So they were closer, like good friends, almost brothers in arms. and then Megatron wanted to free everyone onto his own control, and Optimus wanted the opposite. Everyone just free of their own free will.
At least with the story right now, it seems like the Decepticons are kind of working with Starscream as their leader. And then I read, like, it might have been on Reddit or something, like the person that they keep referencing, like the mysterious person in the past, might be Megatron or something like that. I can't remember if that was in the
Most definitely.
Yeah.
Because they keep referencing like an old, I think it was Soundwave reference, like the old guy in Starscream, like, don't you ever say his name again. I'm the leader now. But that's like MO number one for Starscream is take over leadership of the Decepticons and fuck Megatron. Except if Megatron is in the room, then he's like number one bitch to Megatron. He's like the biggest Cybertron's biggest simp for the leader.
Oh my god. Well, I'm sure Megatron will be making his appearance at some point in the future.
I mean, they seem to be hinting at the fact that he's dead.
Really?
At least that's the vibe I'm getting.
I got the impression that it was some kind of rift, and that was the rift that, you know, maybe ended up with them crash landing on Earth or something like that.
Could be. I could be wrong. I got to go back to issue one, but I'm pretty sure I saw his body among all the Cybertronians on the Ark. Because there was a healthy mix of Autobots and Decepticons there.
Yeah,
and they could only save so many.
Maybe I'm misremembering, but I think there was like some kind of line that was like, oh, we need to resurrect. And then I think that's where they were hinting at, like, do we bring him back? And then Starscream was like, absolutely not. Don't say that name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're basically just giving Josh the entire plot now.
We got to sell him on the book because he's the only one of us who hasn't fully gotten into the Energon stuff yet. And you know, we want the three Amigos to be all invested in it, I guess.
That'd be fun. I would say you don't have to read Void Rivals, but it's also really fucking good.
Yes.
I'm just gonna like dive into anything Energon Universe has at this point.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No, and I hope, because my guess is like these two miniseries, Cobra Commander and Duke, are just that's like beginning material. I'm sure there's stuff coming further down the line that will continue the story, not just in like the main G.I. Joe title that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm excited to see, what happens. How it continues to grow and all that stuff.
Yeah, and if they have, so far they have Duke and Cobra Commander coming out for G.I. Joe, and if they have any more remains to be seen, but if they have that, which I understand why there would be two separate books, one for the good guys, one for the bad guys, are there going to be any more Transformers books as well, is what I'm also curious about. Are they going to find some way to spin off? Is there going to be what's happening on Cybertron? Like that was very much an IDW thing where they'd have like five or six series going at the same time, all dealing with different groups of Transformers doing different things. And it was a lot of fun to try and like see all the different, and some of the books had very different tones. Like there was one, I don't remember what it was called, but it was post-war. Hot Rod took a whole bunch of people into outer space to try and explore the universe like they were always supposed to and find a way to like bring Cybertron back to its former beauty, and just it was said to be like Community in space, like the sitcom Community but in space.
It's an interesting take on Transformers, but
yeah, it was actually really funny and very like dark at times. I think they started off with like six crew members, and as they went to each planet, they gained more, but then one would die. It's like a revolving door of cast members. It was fantastic.
Is there anything specifically that you'd want to see from, let's say, a spin-off Transformers title?
I don't know. I think I'd want to see like a, maybe like a, even if it's a mini, like a four-issue mini, a prequel to what brought them to Earth. Like where the Transformers fit
ended up right now.
Yeah, like how did the arc end up there? Which we all, like Transformers, I was going to say we all, but Transformers fans know the general backstory. But I want to know, like, Jetfire ending up on that planet in Void Rivals, how did he end up there? You know, why are the Autobots and Decepticons together on the arc? What's going on back home? Like, why are they even out in space? Like, there's always questions there, and there is always that understanding from G1 in the past, like general continuity, why these things happen. But I want to know in this universe, what is Danny Warren Johnson or Robert Kirkman's reasoning?
It seems like, again, I don't know all that much, but it seems like there's some kind of war, or there was a war in the past, probably on Cybertron. I don't know.
Yeah, usually there is.
Yeah, resulted in like them fleeing to Earth or something. Yeah.
I mean, the generally, and this happened in a few different continuities. There's been like 8 to 10 different Transformers continuities at this point, between like the comics and the TV shows and the movies.
We complain about DC,
20 different fucking continuities, but yeah. IDW had like 4 of them alone. but typically would start on Cybertron, and then either the Autobots would be like, we need to find a new home because Cybertron is lost, or the Decepticons would be like, we need to go out into space, find more power to take down the Autobots, and then the war would go out into space and go to different planets, and then they would crash on Earth. So if that's what it is, makes sense, but I would like to see what they have.
I dig that. I think that would be cool. Just like a mini that goes into the backstory of the Transformers lore, I guess.
And I want to see like more Transformers. Like, the ones we have so far are cool, and I'm still shocked they have Cliffjumper or Bumblebee. But I'm a huge fan of Hot Rod, which a lot of Transformers fans, like old Transformers fans, would be like, "You're fucking dumb." But I like Hot Rod.
I remember Hot Rod from the movie.
That's why a lot of people don't like Hot Rod.
Yeah, I was shocked to see on Wikipedia that he was played by the same guy who was Bender in The Breakfast Club, but.
Yeah.
Strange world. But I don't know if he's being serious, but to hear Daniel Warren Johnson at the Energon panel at New York Comic Con, Bumblebee was the first character he wanted to kill because he hated Bumblebee. But I don't know if he was because he got a lot of booze for that. I don't know if he's trolling
Bumblebee.
Bumblebee
is like one of the nicest people.
That's why you saw his like corpse in the first issue, I guess. That was by special request.
Request by D.W. Drake.
By Daniel Warren Johnson. Yeah. And then Sean Mackowitz, the editor of the line, was like, "You're being too mean." He's like, "No, but I want to. But you know, he's like, because if you ever hear him in interviews, he's like super soft spoken. He was just like, "Yeah, I really wanted to kill Bumblebee because I kind of hate him." I don't know. I don't know if was like genuine or something.
Yeah,
maybe he had a Cliffjumper toy as a kid. That's usually why.
Maybe that's why he hates Bumblebee, because he could never get the toy. He was stuck with the alt color.
Oh, he was stuck with it. He couldn't do better.
Couldn't get the yellow one. He stuck with the red one that had the cliff, the fucking grapple gun on it.
That's my theory anyway.
Because like, the cool one.
Maybe he didn't have a Bumblebee as a kid. Liked Cliffjumper, and he's like, "Fuck Bumblebee."
Maybe.
And when I write Transformers one day, this is like a 30-year long con. I'm gonna make sure he's dead. I'm gonna make sure he's dead in the first issue.
I thought you were talking about like when you specifically, you as Brandon, writing Transformers to get back at DWG, you're going to kill Cliffjumper in the first issue and have Bumblebee take his place.
Did you want to talk about ill-equipped to write a story? I would have no idea what to do with Transformers. I would do my research, but like...
There's a lot to research, but the fact that like every time there's a new issue, you're asking me, "Who's this character?" I'm like, okay,
I feel literally starting from ground zero.
The librarian is asking me questions about comics. I know. It feels so good.
I'm like bow down to Rob, Transformers Master, because I would like send him messages on Discord like, what's Energon?
Yeah.
What's the core? Like, what is all this?
Yeah. I remember we had a deep discussion about what a spark is. And I said, you need to watch this episode of Beast Wars because Rhinox goes hard on sparks and the soul of a Transformer. Superman versus Optimus Prime.
Oh. I wouldn't even know how to answer that question.
Superman.
What?
Actually, no. Humanity.
Humanity. Humanity
wins. Because, and hear me, Superman values all life, right? Even his enemies he tries to save. And Optimus Prime, his most famous quote is, what is it? Freedom is the right of all sentient beings. Mm-hmm. He also values all life. So if there was ever like a squabble between the two, they might duke it out. But I don't think Superman would necessarily go out to kill Optimus Prime. Superman might knock him down, but eventually they're going to like talk it out because that's what both of them do.
Have they done a Justice League Transformers team up before?
Not yet.
I'm shocked.
They've done Avengers Transformers.
Mm.
That went about as well as you'd expect.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
Yeah. I think Wolverine took someone's head off, if I remember right.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah, he's used to doing Sentinels in, so why not a Cybertronian?
Mm.
All right. One last piece of news I'm excited about that I just for me. Speaking of wrestling, and Brandon, sorry, this is when Josh might take over the conversation.
Good time for me to duck out and fix my charger.
Josh, I sent it in chat early, but I'm super stoked that Triple H today announced that not only is SmackDown coming back to Toronto, but NXT is going to be having a pay-per-view in Toronto, and Money in the Bank is going to be in Toronto, all on the same bloody weekend.
Oh, wow.
And I'm going to do my damnedest to get tickets to Money in the Bank, because I need to go to a fucking pay-per-view. I am That's excited pretty about cool, that. Dude. Yeah.
I miss that. I haven't been able to keep up on much lately, but that's pretty cool, man. You'll be able to go see it, hopefully.
If one we can afford it, because they're fucking expensive.
Is this live or on TV?
Yeah, live. Oh,
that's cool.
You might, depending on where I get seats, you might see me on TV.
Oh, my God. I had to tune in then. That'd be cool. Yeah.
Wear my LA Knight shirt. Maybe I'll order my Bret the Hitman Hart sunglasses.
Mm.
Be right in the front row.
Well, if you are there, fist bump just, from ropes. Yeah, just let us know. I'll keep an eye out.
I got my kids a couple of Yeet shirts.
Nice.
And the youngest one yeeted it that night. Got them for him and had spaghetti the day he got back and it was just annihilated.
No.
Yep. Completely annihilated. But I should have known better. Even their mom, even Ollie, if it's a white shirt, it's getting fucked up.
Yeah.
I've been with these people long enough. I should know better.
That's a shame.
Yeah, never buy white shirts. They're nope. prone to getting stained.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. See? Black is the way to go.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, if you guys have never seen this, Dad and I both had this shirt. It's hilarious. It's the Winchesters in the Reservoir Dogs.
Oh. Yeah, it was who
not
is
Reservoir
that?
Dogs, really fucking Pulp Fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Isn't there like some supernatural spin-off or something that I vaguely remember seeing something like that.
Yeah, you know? there's a show called The Winchesters, which is prequel spinoff of Supernatural. I never watched it though. I think Josh watched it.
I saw some of it. It wasn't the greatest.
No.
It started off, the first episode was phenomenal, and then it immediately went full CW.
Of course. That's what they do.
It's just bad.
Okay. Yeah.
The comic books, huh? Speaking of comic books.
That is sometimes what we do.
Do you guys got any news, though? Any comic news, personal news, anything at all?
Other than my fucking cat, no.
Personal, yeah, nothing new in comics. Personal news, just been catching up on a lot of stuff that I had to miss while I was working myself to death over the previous semester, which was nice. And I got to pick up some new comics, which was cool. I can't even remember the last time I'd read it, but I picked up some issues of the Tomasi run on Batman and Robin.
Right.
I forgot how good that was.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, just going through, it was the Terminus arc again, and it's like that one issue where basically Damian is like, yeah, so I'm going to prove that I'm the best Robin by eventually defeating you in something you think you're confident at and making you feel like a chump. And they're all just like, what's going on? I guess because, you know, Damian is a character who's obviously gone through a lot, but I don't know. I have a soft spot for those really early appearances where he's just like, he's still very new, very fresh.
Yeah.
He's such an asshole, but it's great. It was like, I was reading the arc that Tomasi and Gleason did from the previous run of Batman and Robin called Tree of Blood. And there's like this one moment where they're in the morgue together. And you know, Damian's being disrespectful and Gordon says something like, kid, don't ever say something like that in front of the dead. And he's like, sure, old man, I'll make sure to keep that in mind. It's so perfect. so yeah, I've been having a lot of fun just reading a lot of our comics.
Does it get any better than that?
I can't think of anything, but if you can, let me know, and I'll have to explore it.
I mean, if we're just talking like Batman and Robin, I will forever think issue 18 of the New 52 run is the single best issue of Batman and Robin ever.
Oh, yeah.
That's the silent issue. Yeah.
Famous silent issue. Oh,
but
heartbreaking every time.
As far as Damian, yeah, like early Damian is best Damian.
Yeah, very, very entertaining, I'll say.
Yeah.
It just makes me want to go back, and I've read it like three times at this point, so it's not stale, but it's like you already know how it's going to go. But it reminds me of how much I love like the original Batman and Robin run from Morrison and all the other artists. It's so perfect.
Yeah. All right. Well, with that, I think we'll get into our reviews for the week. Josh, do you want to start us off with the honorables?
There's not very many. We got sections of three this week. Honorable mentions are Superman 78, The Metal Curtain, number 3, Fire and Ice, Welcome to Smallville, number 5, and Titans Beast World Tour Atlantis, number 1.
Yeah, pretty small week.
Mm-hmm.
I've not had a chance to go through that Beast World Tour yet, but I'm going to flip through it and see what it's like. The Central City one was like so-so.
Mm.
This one, not bad.
Yeah. Fair enough. Excuse me. All right. So we're going to jump up into our main reviews now. Pardon me while I clear my throat. Because I'm going to be taking over the reins. Do the first book, Shazam. Number 1 or number 7.
Number 1 again?
Feels
that's
weird.
Soon?
Yeah, right. Already canceled. It does feel weird to call this book Shazam at this point though.
Why is that?
I don't know. It's just like I spent through so many years of calling this character Shazam, and now they're like, we're not calling him Shazam anymore. Like, okay, well, like now I know the book was always not always Shazam, but like I don't know, it just feels weird.
Sure, it was weird for people to go from
for a long time.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's probably weirder for people who had to go from Captain Marvel to Shazam.
Oh, that, like, that was hard enough.
Hell, yeah.
Now we're the Captain, which is
you want to really make your
to what it should be, but
Yeah, you really want to make your head spin. Just read like all the different appearances of Shazam / Captain Marvel from like the 70s on.
Yeah,
and see the various different name changes, and you're like, which one am I supposed to call
him? Wiz.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
That's where he started at. Wiz, yeah. Wiz Comics.
Wiz Comics.
Yep. Fun piece of trivia. The first issue of Wiz Comics is actually number 2.
Do you know why?
I used to.
I don't know if this is the case with Wiz, but I do know that a lot of old issues from like the 40s and so on would usually have artificial numbering because it would boost sales, because higher numbered issues would basically mean like, oh, this series has already been out, it's established, and people would be more incentivized to buy it. Which is why when Blue Beetle came back, after the title was canceled in like the 30s or 40s or something like that, the numbering was at like 50, even though it hadn't had 50 issues. So it could be that. I don't know. But I know that was the case with some other older issues. Or older series issues.
The more you know.
Interesting.
Right? I
never heard about that.
Yeah, I didn't know that was a thing, but it makes sense.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because now it's like, you know, retailers and publishers think, well, if they get to issue 50, no one's going to buy it because it's too high a number. So we have to relaunch the book.
Now it's the opposite.
So it's the opposite. It's completely shifted.
That's funny.
I mean, it's also like different storytelling styles too. Like back then, it was like each issue was its own story. Occasionally, you'd have a multi-issue story, but each issue was multiple stories of multiple characters and it was one-off stories. And now you have like multi-part, six-issue, 10-issue arcs.
Yeah,
it's like it's hard to keep up.
It's Marvel's fault. No, I shouldn't say that. That was before Marvel, but I would say they definitely popularized like the serialized story, like your epic 6-5-issue, 3-issue tale or whatever.
Yeah. I wonder what some of the earliest ones were.
Shazam was pretty early.
Shazam was really early. And this one came out early in the year because it's the first week. All right, so this is Shazam number 7, The Captain versus Black Adam. This is story told, written by Mark Waid with art from Goran Suzuka, colors from Ives Svortsina. I apologize, I'm butchering names, and letters from Troy Pateri. Sorry, I don't know what the fuck is up with my throat. We are opening up on the Captain fighting the Bizarro Captain, because this year is apparently a Bizarro year.
Bizarro,
we're going to see a lot of Bizarro right now. Billy has no idea where this Bizarro Captain came from, apart from obviously Bizarro World, but why he's there, what caused him to be there, or how he got there. Questions are just left unanswered. But he's doing what he can to fight off Bizarro Captain, and eventually realizes that everything Bizarro Captain is opposite to everything that he is. So he uses some quick thinking, thanks to Solomon, the wisdom of Solomon, and his own kind of backwards logic, and convinces the Bizarro Captain that he has no strength, no stamina, no flight, and basically no wisdom whatsoever, leaving him open to just giving away all the answers he needs, and finds it was Felix Faust all along, who was using it as a distraction to rob a bank. So Billy takes Faust to jail. But at that very same time, over the skies of Kandak, as we saw at the end of the last issue, the dinosaur invaders, or the dinosaur politicians, are like army general.
They're like dinosaur tax assessors.
Somewhere. Yeah. Complete with Star Trek uniforms and an admiral. have landed in Kandak, and Black Adam is not happy about it, considering this an invasion. Takes the fight directly to them, decks the Admiral Dinosaur and the Schnoz, and all the red shirt dinosaurs are going after him. So they fire a missile straight at Kandak, and Black Adam flies after it, catches it, but it explodes in the air, sending him careening down onto the planet, into the city. Papers from the dinosaur spaceship are falling all over the city, and this just makes Adam even more angry for all the litter, I guess. Over in Fawcett City, Billy has come back home as his family has asked him to meet them at a new location that he's not familiar with. When he does that, they all arrive. The family's all there to reveal that their foster parents have bought a brand new home and it's big enough for each of the kids to have their own bedroom. A lot of open field, a lot of woods, and even a bit of a lake next to it. So it's just the perfect house for this big family. But Billy gets a call from Tawny, and the dinosaurs are there at their old house. So Billy has to fly off as the captain and try and figure this shit out. He saves Tawny just before the red shirt dinosaurs are about to laser him. And they are there to look for their other comrade, their advanced man that the Shazam family are just calling Mr. Dinosaur, even though he has now become a quote-unquote butler of sorts for the Rock of Eternity, and essentially quit his prior job as a tax assessor. I guess, yeah, we were calling a tax assessor, like bureaucrat like of some kind, lawyer, if you will. But you know, they're not going to accept that answer. They want their man, and now there's a lot more paperwork to deal with. And as the captain is talking back, the Admiral Dinosaur says, "Tell me, is every Earthling who dresses like you belligerents?" And that's when Black Adam appears and Billy realizes what the hell they're talking about. Now, there's only so many people that dress like him, and they're both here. So Black Adam is about to once again punch the Admiral Dinosaur in the schnoz, but Billy gets in the way, and they have a big fight, which is right at the current house that the family lives in. They go back and forth quite a lot, trading blows, until eventually Billy realizes they've gone too far and have utterly destroyed the old house, which they needed to sell in order to afford the new home. But now that it's basically in pieces and as a pile of rubble, there's no way to sell it. And they are effectively homeless. Wop, wop. Good job, Billy. So yeah, that's where the issue ends for now. It was kind of funny to me that Adam was like, Billy says, "Stop, stop." And Adam's like, "What? why are we stopping?" And then he's like, stops to look at the house.
My money. He's like, "What are you talking about?
I don't care. Kill a dinosaur.
What?
Yeah.
That is of no concern to the ruler of Kandak.
Exactly.
I understand. This is my money.
Yeah. I would honestly, it would be somewhat out of character, I think, but I would love it if at like next issue it starts with Adam being like, "Oh, Billy, I understand." He's like, I feel for you, man.
He's like, "Oh my god, I'm so sorry." I can give you guys a loan if you need. You know, I'm sure I can dig into the.
I've got some gold somewhere. Yeah. isn't Kandak a very poor country?
Yeah, and that's why I was like, it'll be not like, a lot, but,
like $3. that's what I got right
I'll
now.
I'll do what I can to help, Mr. Batson.
Yeah. Wait, is it though? Because now I'm remembering the Christopher Priest Black Adam series. He had like a private jet, I think, and like really nice clothes.
You can assume that the rulers are probably pretty well off, as is the case with a lot of like, let's say, I don't know a way to say this without sounding like horribly racist, but countries that have corrupt governments, basically, you'll find they're the ones profiting. So he probably has a lot of money. I don't know that the people of Kandak do.
That you say countries with corrupt government, but like that's most countries nowadays. Yeah. I don't think there's any way to take that as racist because it's fucking everywhere. So I think you're in the clear. But yeah, like this issue, a little. I okay, so it's been a fun run so far, but I feel like this is a little bit more grounded while still keeping its silliness. It's mm-hmm. not as out there, and it's still continuing the same plot threads that they built up in the first six issues, but now it's a new story arc. They finished with the gods, and they're moving on to some new stuff, and it has what I feel is like classic Shazam zaniness still, but this is a little bit more grounded, a little bit more natural to the character, I feel. And I'm all for this. I'm still loving it. Seven issue now. Second story arc beginning. I am still loving it. And the art in this issue, really fucking good.
Yeah. Gran Suzuka is great.
Yeah. The facial expressions on Billy I'm looking at right now on the second last page is just fantastic. Not like top tier or anything, but still really fucking good. Mm-hmm. And just like, fuck, I'm just having a good time like looking at the issue. I don't even need to read it. Mm. And there's even some pages where you get like the classic, like no whites of the eyes, just like a black circle and a line, like the old style eye that you used to get from Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Suzuka, I'm not sure how to pronounce it exactly, but he just has like a very like simple kind of old fashioned style. He did a book with Garth Ennis called Marjorie Finnegan, Temporal Criminal. And that book is, that book is a riot. But it has like that same kind of art style where it's some of the most vile things you've ever seen, but it's drawn in almost like the simplistic way. So it looks like it doesn't work, but it does.
Yeah.
So I love his art style.
Yeah. I'm happy to see Tawny again, and also looks great. And the design choice for the crewmen basically on the dinosaur spaceship is like full on Star Trek uniform. They're clearly red shirts. I was waiting for one of them to die. I imagine it's going to happen next issue.
The joy that I had in seeing like this small panel of four of the red shirt dinosaurs with like their little blasters.
Yeah.
It was so ridiculous, but it was so perfect.
I was actually just thinking about that as he said it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh. Liquefy the first one.
Perfect. It's so
very
perfect.
Good. All right. So this is getting a 9.25 out of 10 for me. It's a riot. It's fun. It's good. it's good to read.
Yeah, no, I'm right there with you. I gave it a 8.75 myself.
Yeah.
I agree. It does feel like a little more grounded in a way, I think, because we're not dealing so much with like, oh, they're going to the moon or there's the god stuff and like all that. Like, this is, you know, it's a little bit more kind of like family stuff with Billy, and then also like kind of just a basic fight between Black Adam and Shazam, or the Captain, if you will.
Yeah.
So it's not quite like going into all the otherworldly stuff yet. The only like otherworldly stuff is the fact that, and I can't believe I'm saying this like it's a normal everyday thing, but a bunch of dinosaurs show up dressed like shirts from Star Trek. But aside from that, yeah, it's just really fun. It still continues to be a lot of fun, and like this is a book that consistently makes me smile with the zanier moments, like Rob said.
Yeah.
But also just like, I don't know, it just doesn't take itself that seriously. It's just having fun. And I don't know why I love this dinosaur plot so much. I don't know if it's because it's
ridiculous weird and interesting.
Weird, that it makes it interesting, or I'm just so used to this kind of stuff that like, I'm like, yeah, of course, you know, Shazam will be dealing with some dinosaur bureaucrats. Why not? It's great. And I also second, it's great to have Tawny back. So
yeah,
8.75.
Yeah. It's like, I'm comparing it to previous Shazam series that we've had over the past 10 to 12 years. Like there was the one during the, not really Future State, but like the one spinning out of Future State, and then there was the Jeff Johns one. And while they were interesting and they were good reads, they were also very serious at times. And while the Jeff Johns run did have some very family oriented stuff and some well written adventures, it lacked that fun that I always came to experience from Shazam comics. That I was expect from Shazam comics, and this just brings it right back for me.
It was always missing like that element of whimsy, even though fantastical stuff was happening. It always felt like, and maybe that was just a byproduct of spinning out of the New 52 or continuing some of the stuff that he'd set up during the New 52. But I agree. It always felt like Shazam is a mature superhero, and I don't know, something about that just felt like it's fine. And you know, don't get me wrong, they're decent moments, but it didn't feel like, I don't know, like how Shazam should, taking itself as seriously, just being kind of fun and lighthearted.
Like end of the day, these are all kids.
Yeah.
And like as much as they at this point well experienced being superheroes, they're still kids. They're gonna have kid adventures.
I guess with the exception of Mary, but like she's a kid at heart.
Yeah, like she's a kid at heart that's going to university, but
Yeah. Trust me, I can relate.
Yeah.
All right, about you, Josh? Man in the corner.
I do hope you enjoyed this one more, but from your face, I don't think so.
the last issue I actually enjoyed, much to Rob's surprise, but this one was less so. The art looked kind of classic Shazam, and I thought that was cool. But the story, I'm just bored with it. The Space Dinosaurs of Cotton, kind of old, and like we come right out of that previous story with the gods and get thrown right in with Black Adam. It just feels abrupt, I guess. The stories aren't horrible, like at all. It's just that they're not interesting enough to get me invested. So I gave it a 6.5 out of 10.
Well, so as I've said before, it's okay to be wrong, but.
You can't win them all, as we've said.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll jump on over to DC Power Rangers Blue Beetle.
It's definitely feeling like that these days.
I've been saying since issue one, it's a Sentai book.
Blue Beetle number 5, written by Josh Trujillo. Art by Adrian Gutierrez, colors by Will Quintana, letters by Lucas Gattoni, and the cover came from Gutierrez and Luis Guerrero. While Jaime is talking with Victoria Cord, trying to figure out a way to kill the Blood Scarab, Starfire gathers everyone else who all happen to be okay with killing Blood Scarab. Speaking of which, we cut to Blood Scarab, and he is somehow, he's managed to raise an army of Blood Scarabs from his victims during that last fight. And I'm going to say that this definitely sounds personal for Blood Scarab. So Team Jaime fly off to confront him. They pick the fight. While the rest of the team fights the new underlings, Jaime goes straight for Blood Scarab. He calls for the weapon that Victoria Cord made. It fires and it hits them. It weakens Blue Beetle, but Blood Scarab pretty much remains unfazed. Jaime remembers part of the prophecy. Only you alone can defeat him. And then the issue closes. The art in Blue Beetle is always some of the best when it comes out. It always looks good, and this run has been reading really well too, and this is no exception, not this issue. I'm really enjoying the story here, and I can't wait to see what happens next. 8 out of 10.
I agree. It's been a fun story so far. Definitely a big, and this is from my own perspective of trying to catch up to everything Jaime Reyes, but a big grow up moment and almost a departure from classic Jaime Reyes. As you could kind of tell from this spinning out of Graduation Day, struggling with the idea of needing to kill somebody else, but it being almost a necessity. And complete this issue comes complete with its own It's Morphin Time moment. And I fucking love it. I was just surprised that, and this is both as like someone that's reading Blue Beetle continuity right now, but also a Power Rangers fan, why Blue Beetle didn't go into the battle in Battleizer mode is, was it Legato form?
Legato.
Legato form, yeah.
Isn't Legato a musical term?
I think it's Spanish for legend, isn't it? Legendary?
Yes.
I know, legato, I think, yeah, I think legato is a musical term as well.
Yeah, legato indicates that musical notes are played or sung smoothly and connected.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So basically when he goes to his legato form, it all goes smoothly and is perfected.
Mm.
Yeah. That's how I'm going to take that. Yeah.
You really can't take it any other way.
No. Yeah. But yeah, like why he didn't start in Battleizer mode, it was beyond me. Like you're going up against a formidable enemy that can mop the floor with you and the rest of your Rangers. But why would you go in just your normal suit and not like your more powerful suit when you know this guy is going to need some heavy artillery to take down?
Good question.
Yeah. Sorry, I shouldn't say Rangers. They're the Beetleborgs.
Oh my god. Is that another? That's not a Sentai, is it?
It is Beetleborgs, yeah. Oh, Big really? Bad Beetleborgs, yeah. It was in the 90s. Yeah. It came and went long before you were born.
Mm. Oh, I see. It was also fun. Looking it up. I see it's also by Saban, so that makes sense.
Yeah. But like even like down to the color scheme, like obviously they had the first three Beetles. It was a red, blue, and green one, and then in the second season they got their new forms, which was gold, silver, and green. And then you have the Beetles here. You have obviously Blue Beetle, and then the other two. There's gold one and green one. Like okay, this fucking fits.
I know. I'm like Jesus. I mean, I know Blue Beetle, you know, presumably predates Beetleborgs, but I'm like shit. Were they not worried about getting sued?
But like, well, Blue Beetle predates Beetleborgs, but Beetleborgs predates Jaime Reyes, and that's this true. Version that's of Blue fair. Beetle, right? Yeah,
yeah,
a battle suit. So
yeah, the mech, I guess you could say, Blue
Beetle. Yeah,
or mech inspired.
Yeah, story is still really interesting. It feels like the story is hopefully starting to wrap up because I'm like dying to find out what happens with Blood Scarab. Hopefully next issue we get a bit more of a wrap up on this arc and can get into something else. But I'm still digging it. I hope Ted is alive. I'm getting confused with the movie now because I'm still halfway through the movie and I haven't had a chance to finish it. So my plot's a little confused about Ted Gordon. But yeah, I hope it comes back soon. Because I love seeing Ted and Jaime together.
Still haven't seen.
That's fine. So between the three of us, we've seen it like one and a half times. but I'm giving this 8.75 out of 10.
Nice. Well, I'll say this much. I will watch Blue Beetle as soon as Josh reads all the stuff in the Energon universe. That's my offer. That's my trade.
That's true. That's yeah.
That's
all of the stuff. Like even the stuff that's not come out yet.
Well, if you can do that, you know, that would be incredibly impressive. And also, I would ask you for spoilers.
Yeah, like share with us. Yeah, like, why are you hogging the future?
If you already have like all the five issues of Duke and five issues of Cobra Commander already, I would like.
Oh, is it minis?
On your ass. Yeah, they're just minis, I think.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Anyway, as far as this Blue Beetle story is concerned, no, I still really dig it. And I think, I mean, I don't want to just kind of echo everything that you guys said. So I'll just kind of highlight like how great the art is. And there's a really cool moment that I loved where they do a little flashback to what is not necessarily Golden Age Blue Beetle, but actually like this brief era of Silver Age Blue Beetle in the 50s when they revived the title with Dan Garrett and gave him the new costume and everything. And they even had like the type font that they were primarily using in the 50s. And it was just, it was really slickly done. And I loved it. And it was such a perfect homage. And so I don't know. I'm still really digging the story, but honestly, like the art was just phenomenal in this issue for me and really helped it stand out, which is great because when you have your Super Sentai Beetle core, you want the art to really pop. So I gave it an 8.5. Like I really dug this issue. I'm still digging the series a lot.
Caw-caw.
Caw-caw.
Agreed. That's why it was caca. Sorry, I don't remember what the last one was. Right, we are going on to our last book, Caca. It's yes. Birds of Prey number 5.
Caca.
Yeah, yes. I was convinced it was Batman for some reason. But
then I was like, what? I thought you were just being silly. I just
went
silly.
To check the list, and then I was like, oh, shit. Okay, Birds of Prey, let's go. All right.
Brandon. Yes, Birds of Prey number 5, where the birds don't sing except for one of them, but she's not singing as much in this issue because I don't know where her band is. Written by Kelly Thompson with art and colors by Arist Dine, and letters from Clayton Cowles. This issue picks up with the Birds of Prey managing to hold off Megara and the Amazon, though they notice that Megara's mass is slowly decreasing as they're fighting her. And they see that it's starting to escape, presumably to chase after Sin, who ran off at the end of the last issue. While Barda and Dinah are chasing after Megara to make sure she doesn't get Sin, and Harley and Batgirl soon follow, Zealot remains in the chamber and tries to hold off the rest of the Amazons in a very cool solo sequence. This book has a lot of cool Zealot moments, I have to say. So for your Wildcats fan, they will be very pleased with this book, I think. Following a surprise attack, Sin is swallowed by Megara, and the sight of this scene forces Dinah into like a momentary catatonic state where she's just so shocked by what happens that she can't even move or let alone act. And Harley is able to punch her out of her momentary daze of grief, as well as remind her that, you know, it's probably not the end because there hasn't been a big ass transformation sequence, and every villain has a giant transformation sequence. So like, you just gotta wait for that to happen, and then once we get to that point and the volcano starts exploding and the music starts playing, that's when you know that shit is hit the fan. Inside Megara, Sin learns the true nature of what Megara desires. Namely, Megara's desire to inhabit a host body, and she believes that Sin is the best candidate for the job. And then through a series of sonics and strengths and a few well-placed bombs from Harley, Dinah is able to cut into Megara and chase after Sin, thankfully locate her, and they're able to kind of interrogate Megara as well. But while they're doing all this inside Megara, Cass makes her way back to the chamber to locate the urn that might contain Megara, and finds an unconscious Zealot first after she's able to revive Zana, and learns from Meridian that the urn is back with Megara. Cass, Meridian, and Zealot come face to face with Megara infected and mind controlled Wonder Woman, as well as more Amazons. And of course, they're forced to fight them and hold them off. And while they're busy doing that, Dinah, still inside Megara, throws up a bunch of sonic amplifying bombs and attacks Megara full on, and we'll see the full extent of that battle next month. Birds of Prey number 5. I hate saying this because it sounds mean, but I forget what discussion we were having. I think Rob might have brought this point up, but it was like a question of, when can a story make the art seem better? Or likewise, when can the art make a story seem better? And I think this is a case of the former, where the art in this issue is, personally speaking, not something that I greatly enjoy, but I still really like the story. So that kind of elevates the way that the art works for me, at least a little bit. So for all the kind of flaws, especially in, I think, the way that this artist draws anatomy, and I don't want to be a stickler about that because like I love my impressionist art, But at the same time, like, I don't know. I think going from Leonardo Romero to this was quite a jump. So it was a little bit hard. But making up for that is definitely the story, which is just like, it's keeping the action going. It's keeping the momentum going. And I really like that stuff. So while the art is probably the most lackluster part for me, the story definitely makes up for it. So I gave it an 8 out of 10, which is I would say pretty generous considering that I didn't really like the art in the issue. But like I said, it's just a solid story. It's keeping stuff going. And I'm definitely interested to see this throwdown between Megara and Dinah in the next issue.
Yeah. I didn't spend a lot of time looking at the anatomy because I would feel creepy staring at pages of five women in somewhat skimpy outfits while I'm at work. So I spent more time looking at the faces and like the first page.
What,
like,
you have something better to do? You know, you have a job or something?
Not be a creep in the lunchroom. That would be that'd be fantastic. But the first page, what struck me right away was the faces. Like, most of them looked exactly the same. Like, the only one that really looked different to me, apart from Cassandra because of the mask, was Harley's. But Xana, Barda, and Dinah, right on the first page where they're all like jumping into the action, all their faces look exactly the same to me. And that was like striking. And like, I didn't mind the art, but it's really well done, but it is, for the story, a bit of a downgrade from Leonardo Romero. If they started the next arc with this art, it'd be a different story. But the fact that we've already had four issues of one artist, and then you throw a new artist in this, which with such a strikingly different art style, it's difficult. So,
well, I think that's a good point. Like, if you had a story that was maybe more suited for this art style, it might be better. But it felt kind of weird to go from like the high action and kind of really interesting panel layouts of Leonardo Romero to like,
yeah,
I don't know what this is, but like, it just didn't feel like it worked for the story.
I do feel like if we had this artist on the whole arc, it would still work. Like, I don't think the art doesn't fit the story in this case. It's just the fact that it's right in the middle of the story. Because I did like the art. It's just, it was distracting. Not for the same reason Brandon says looking at anatomy.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I guess it's my defense, so I don't sound like a freak compared to Rob. I think what Romero excelled at is like, all of them have different body types, right? Like, Barda is huge. Cass is relatively smaller. Xana has like a slight build. And then I would say Dinah is probably a little like in between that, whereas like definitely has a kind of a muscular build, but it's a little bit more slender. But everyone just kind of had like the same. I like that. I like the diversity of body types, you know, and how Romero was able to keep it consistent. But they all just kind of look the same here. And it's like,
yeah,
I felt like it lost that individuality. So,
yeah.
So I don't sound like a creep who's obsessing.
The one thing I can say, because I always like studied Harley Quinn costume, so in this one I did study Harley Quinn's costume here. I just love like Harley designs. Everybody seems to have a different one, and in this one, like, Harley seemed excessively thin.
Yeah, they all kind of were.
Yeah. Like, compared to most other times, like this one, like too thin. it was a little much. Story though was really good. A lot of good moments. Harley pulling bombs out of thin air was fantastic. Also makes you wonder if it has anything to do with what's going on in her main series, just being able to pull the Vorpal fish out of another universe. Is she doing the same with the bombs? Because she may be a cartoon like character, but she's not really a cartoon character. So who knows?
Kind of a cartoon character.
Just kind of. She thinks she's a cartoon character. She's not really. She doesn't have cartoon physics. So, as far as we know.
I don't know. Carrying around that giant hammer, she might as well.
Yeah. But yeah, I still enjoyed the issue, and I'm very curious to see what's going to happen at the end. I do hope Sin gets to come back with Dinah. I don't even know what to score this one, to be honest with you, because like as much as I liked it, 8.25 out of 10.
That's a respectable score.
Yes, I thought so. All right, Josh.
There's not much else for me to say that y'all haven't said, other than I didn't hate the art as much. And for an ancient monster, Majira sure talks pretty modern. but yeah, I don't really have a lot to complain about or add to from what y'all have said. It looked great. It was a fun read, and it moved the story along nicely. I gave it an 8 out of 10.
I think to your point, I forget what the line was exactly, but Megaris is something like, because she has like all these different like lifelines in her or their body or something like that, so she can see all these different lives. And Sin is like, why do you sound so petty? And he's like, oh, or petty and sarcastic or something. And he's like, well, all these human lives are like kind of sarcastic, so I guess it just kind of rubbed off on me or something like that. So maybe that's why she kind of, they sound like a more modern human or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite moment picks up on some of that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, did you give, oh, sorry, I didn't hear your score. That's why I moved over.
Yeah. 8 out of 10.
Okay. Right on. All right. Well, as you were then, favorite moment, triple threat. What? No. Top three.
Triple threat. Top three. You're still in wrestling, my friend.
Triple threat. I'm so stoked. Okay.
My top three are Poison Ivy gets number three, Birds of Prey comes in at number two, and Batman is going to take the first spot, man. It's pretty dang good. My favorite moment is right after in Birds of Prey, right after Canary tells Sin that she can come and live with her and Ali, Majira's like, I feel like you guys are missing the headline, which is Sin is done. And I'm like, I'm the new Sin, or will be shortly. But I'll probably need a place to stay, Canary, if that offer still stands. that was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Well, at least she's committed to being Sin.
Right.
It's not gonna completely upset her life. She'll come and live with Dinah. She'll just be a possessed host.
She is committed to Sin.
Yes.
Weirder things have happened.
Yep.
What about you guys?
Brandon?
I had Birds of Prey at number three. I had Blue Beetle at number two. But my number one pick for this week is Shazam, which, again, I know one of us may be a hater, but I still really enjoy this book. my favorite one, I kind of already gave it away, but it's just like the panel of the four dinosaurs with their ray guns looking like they're straight out of Star Trek was just, yeah, it's so perfect. Like I want to send that to someone with no context and just have them be like, what?
It might be a great meme.
Are you okay?
If you take the text out of the bubbles and just input your own text, it might be a perfect image background.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to play around with that.
Yeah. That'd be good. all right,
you, good sir.
For me, I have what the fuck did I have? Poison Ivy number 18 at number three, Shazam number seven at number two, and I'm giving number one as well to Batman number 141, which we will get into my number one and number three, as well as I believe it was Josh's number one and number three a little later in our bonus show. So be sure to subscribe to our Discord to get access to that and much more, including all the fun conversations we have, like how I just posted my biggest what the fuck moment from Breath of the Wild. I hope y'all enjoy it. Because my buddy sends it to me every year at the beginning of the year because his Facebook reminds him, like, yeah, this happened. Remember, Rob, how you got fucked up by a boulder? Like, yeah. Yeah, no, you got to check it out. I laugh at it every time. But yeah, my favorite moments from Poison Ivy, because I can't take the ray gun dinosaurs. Thanks, Brandon. That's fine. I had a feeling you'd pick that one. Poison Ivy, when she meets up with him, Batman, and just her in a monologue about him the whole time, like him being a dick, and just the conversation back and forth between them was kind of fun. Just seeing her inner thoughts about Batman and how he's a monosyllabic asshole, I think was the line. Something like that. Yeah.
Pretty close. Yeah.
All right. So with that, that is our show. Josh, I know I have this.
time you got it.
So be sure to join in every week, same geek time, same geek channel. As I said, subscribe to our Discord and get access to all sorts of stuff, including our bonus show. Check out our website for bonus reviews, our text reviews, and so much more. So we have to get out of here, so you have to as well. In the Geek Matrix, you are not alone. In the Geek Matrix, everybody has a home.
It looks at that.
Nailed it.
I got it.
Nailed.
Ha ha ha.